Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative, outside of New York City in Montclair, New Jersey.
And I am Lori Collar, co-founder of TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Well, before we get into the fact that we have a special guest, which I'm very excited about, let's talk about what's happening in design studios.
Well, this episode is going to have a certain underlying theme, so I'll go with that. I'm finishing up some presentations for my wife, who works for Seiko Watches. And every year she has to go to Basel, Switzerland, the big watch show for a week to introduce the new products. So we put their presentations together for them.
Very fun.
Yeah. She tells me it's not because she has to stay indoors for 18 hours a day, just having meeting after meeting, but it's still Switzerland.
And you don't get to go as her support staff?
I do not. No, I actually I rarely get to travel with her. She gets to go to some interesting places. I got to tag along. She went to the Daytona 500. And we got a backstage, all access VIP thing. I have video, I literally had to step out of the way as the tires were coming off in
that is so cool.
It was really very cool. And I, at one point I was behind the crew chiefs and everything, and they said, don't take any pictures of their computers. And I was like, okay. So it was very neat.
Cool. And you do all that work in PowerPoint or?
We do all sorts of stuff for them with InDesign and PowerPoint, but these specific presentations we used to do in PowerPoint, then we moved to Prezi, then we went back to PowerPoint, and that's where we're going to stay. We went to Prezi for a while because they really wanted better video support and on the iPad, and at that point, yeah. PowerPoint was not so great, but now it is, so we're back to PowerPoint.
Oh, full cycle, full yeah. circle.
And of course, now, if they ever actually wanted some of that Prezi-like stuff, we could probably do that as well using the new Morph and all that.
Yeah,
kind of
Morph.
Stuff.
This is, we're still at the beginning of the year, and it is an amazing amount of travel show site projects, which is great, but it's even more than usual. We've got the entire team out and about everywhere, so we've just done a lot of those. But one of the interesting things is I was kind of looking through our design log is just, so just this year, we've had an uptick in PowerPoint documents. So using PowerPoint, usually an 8.5 by 11 portrait layout. So we're emulating an InDesign or a Word document. It's just easier to have more creative layouts in PowerPoint, especially when the end product is PDFs that'll be emailed or circulated around in whatever way. So huge uptake in those. We got a new client. We just sent off the first proof, and they actually contacted us because it was here's our print brochures. We need to make presentations of them. And actually it even stems more interesting side, total off topic here, but a side note, I had done a study for a large company, which I believe was GE. I can't remember right now. It was last year. And they came to us and said, hey, we're looking at transitioning our workflow. I won't say what they were using, but they wanted a case study on doing basically PowerPoint documents and a comparison between using an industry standard InDesign versus Word versus PowerPoint for these type of documents. So I did this. We did a lot of really in-depth examples. We looked at a lot of their documentations and what they did, a lot of pros and cons of each. Gave them this, 45-page report. I was kind of excited, thinking we'd do a lot of work with them. And they said, thank you. This is great information. And I haven't heard from them since. But I did take that information and kind of summarize it into a blog post, which I guess this company that's actually based over in Europe found and said, this is exactly what we're trying to do, is to figure out how to move our workflow around. So I gave them the pros and cons based on their print brochure. And they said, go with it. So we've got a 8.5 by 11 PowerPoint. Actually, it's European. We're doing A4. No, not A4. A4. Uh-oh, help me out. Is it A1?
No. A4 is A4 like is letter size. Letter size, but just a little bit weirder.
A1's poster size. Got it. Yes, yeah. Got it. It's just longer. So yeah. We're doing it there, and it's really cool. I'm very excited to get feedback. There's a little time difference. We sent that off yesterday afternoon. We'll probably get, it's probably in my inbox now. But so anyways, that's kind of an interesting uptick in types of project requests we've had just this year.
It's good to hear. I've done that kind of thing for a long time, but I've actually had an uptick as well recently, and clients just really, really happy, like surprisingly happy with the result and also their ability to format and make edits and changes on their own. So it's, again, it's been out there for a long time, but I think people are discovering or coming to terms or saying, really liking the solution.
Maybe it's a good topic for a future, because you got to really be, it's a different type of template that we put together. We now have a base one, but yeah, it's a good topic. Hey, on to our special guest. What's happening in your studio?
My studio? You mean your studio? Well, today is my first day back in the office. I got back late last night. I have been on the road, as you know, a whole lot since January. A lot of good shows. I'd say Miami wins for the best weather. A nice mix of end clients. We've been doing stuff for medical, corporate, a new business systems client. I just got off a really fun consumer products show. A lot of good crews I got to work with. But it's just really good to be back home and to hang out with you guys.
It's great to have you, Lori.
Well, welcome to round two of a discussion on typography and specifically how it plays to layout, design, ultimately professional PowerPoint slides. This is a continuation of our discussion in episode 23, which was typography and typesetting in PowerPoint, where we just had more to talk about than we had planned. And this round, thank you to our special guests. We have Lori Collar from TLC Creative Services joining us to give another perspective on kind of the print design and layout and typography. And I will say that our little simple outline for this probably has too many topics to cover even in another episode that we're going to put together. So this is going to be fun and exciting. Please join us.
And Troy, one of Lori's main attributes you just need to remind the audience of if they haven't caught on already.
Well, in addition to having a formal degree in graphic design, she's worked with some of the largest corporations in the country. She's designed everything from business cards to highway billboards, catalogs, annual reports, everything else. Amazing animated visual PowerPoint presentations. And the co-founder of TLC Creative Services. She is also my lovely bride of 26 years.
Aww.
That's fantastic. Lori, so I know a little bit about you, but not everything. What's your background in design and this whole world that we work in? Where did you come from?
Well, how far back do you want to go? Let's see. We'll just start with college. Always interested in art. Had a great high school teacher that steered me in a good direction. But I have a Bachelor of Science. Yes, science. Degree in Applied Art and Design from California Polytechnic State University San Luis Obispo, or for my fellow Californians, Cal Poly SLO. So right out of college, I began working in the print industry. Eventually, I ended up running pre-press departments, meaning I not only got to design a wide variety of print pieces, but I also became an expert at prepping those designs and customers' designs, getting them properly prepped for print. Eventually, I went out on my own with Troy. He joined me full time after daughter number two was born. And it's actually a little tidbit of information. It's actually Troy who put us on the path to where our company is now in terms of focusing so much on presentation design.
Well, we should probably finalize that statement, Nolan, with Lori. What is your title for the corporation?
I am the CEO.
I am the president, so I report to her. So
yeah, I was going to ask what your title was, Troy. You're CEO and president. Okay.
So I listened to your typography episode last month, and one key thought was that does everyone understand the nuances of typesetting in the conversation?
No, nobody under age 30 understands that word. I just want to tell you this one thing. Whenever I hear typesetting, I think of David Sedaris. He has this great essay in which he talks about the rise of computers and everything, and how overnight he dropped his graphic designer friends when they got rid of their fun spray mount and scotch tape and everything in favor of computers. And then he tags it. He adds that he then fell in with a group of typesetters that would later betray him as well. So that's,
technology advances right there in one essay.
So typesetting is, yeah, what is it exactly?
I've not really thought about it typesetting specifically, but I see and envision hot type like we used to use, like we used to have it a display in at a lobby of a printing company because they were past hot type, but it was a really fun place. And it was, when you type in type or typesetting in any popular stock photography place, most of the images are hot type, which is something that hasn't existed or been in use for a practical use for just decades. But I imagine few
designers that was literally setting, physically setting individual type letters. Yeah. I mean, that's where the word comes from.
I doubt very few designers today have ever seen actual hot type letters, let alone use them. But that's kind of what I envision is how do you physically position type on the piece that's going to be printed or, you know, displayed.
And just to help out here, so you're referring when you say hot type, those are those cute little block letters with the metal letter that's backwards. So I've
like
seen
stamps.
Them actually. Yeah.
Yeah,
and I've actually seen them. They're coming back. They're now you finding them in home decor stores. You know, they're like cool tchotchke stuff, but not real.
They made the jump from true antique stores to now just being tchotchke. Manufactured.
Exactly. So this is my formal graphic design degree education coming out. But the official definition of typesetting, and of course I'm going to summarize this from Wikipedia, is typesetting is the composition of text by means of arranging physical types or the digital equivalents, letters and other symbols are arranged for visual display. So really this is more of an overarching word, kind of like a verb, whereas typography is the art and technique of arranging type to make written language legible, readable, and appealing when displayed. So the arrangement of type involves selecting typefaces, point size, line length, line spacing, or letter spacing, sometimes known as tracking, and adjusting the space within letter pairs or kerning. So this is a word I would say that has a lot of meat to it. It's what a designer does with type versus what someone who just slaps words on a page does. So I see typography and typesetting as part of the same conversation today. Typography is the design aspect of using type, whereas typesetting was traditionally the art of laying the physical letters based on the designer's specification. But now with digital design, I'd say the two have pretty much morphed into a single idea. But a good designer will understand and execute typography well.
Cool. And we won't get into then the different definition of font versus typeface. we'll leave that. But my guess is that you're probably pretty fond of a program called InDesign, being a type person, right?
Oh, yeah. I love InDesign.
So anyways, how far do you go back, Lori, to give us a little more of a history of what you first learned with? Because I find this fascinating.
Okay. I'm all for transparency, but okay. So, this is actually kind of interesting. So in college, I'm not going to tell you what year, but I actually formally learned how to typeset by entering code into an old CRT monitor with a mainframe computer attached to it in the room next door. So you enter this code and then you'd save that file to a floppy disk and you'd physically take the floppy disk downtown to an output house and you would give them the floppy disk and they'd output it onto this nice bright white photo like paper. But here's the kicker. If you see a mistake, guess what you get to do? You go all the way back to the computer lab at school and you adjust your code and you repeat the whole process. I mean, it was painful, but this is what people did back then. It was amazing.
And there were literal job descriptions of typesetters doing all that.
Yeah.
I mean, I learned and used Quark, but, you know, when InDesign came around, I think I was a pretty quick convert to it. Because it was just, I was just in Adobe, you know. It was just in the world of Adobe now. It just made sense to move to it.
See, I think that's amazing. Because in college, I actually bought my first Mac. It was a 2CI. But InDesign wasn't around then, so I'm really dating myself. So I literally learned on Aldus PageMaker. So no. I don't know if you caught that. It was Aldus PageMaker at the time. And then that quickly, though, morphed into Quark. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Well, I did. I at the tail end of college, working on our arts newspaper, we didn't have to go to the separate place downtown, but we would print out on the laser printer the text, and then we'd have the separate images, and we would paste up, physically, and then send it down to for photo, all that kind of stuff. But
okay, so moving off of memory lane here, and what used to be, let's talk about
current back to presentation.
Stuff. Yeah, let's talk about.
But one thing though, Nolan, when you and I were learning kind of that process, there's one almost elegance to type, in that I was taught just the idea of letter spacing and how type looks on a page and proper spacing. I mean, that was a huge emphasis. I mean, I think there's classes devoted just to type.
I think you're right. And that brings us to presentation, right?
Yes.
It does. Okay. So let's think about this. Thinking of design in, let's just say, InDesign compared to anything else, or in this case, more compared to PowerPoint, what are some of the big philosophical differences? So what do you see as a big difference between using InDesign and when you move over to PowerPoint? Designers do not gravitate to both programs. So why?
Right. The whole Adobe suite is targeted for the professional graphic designers, and PowerPoint is targeted at the rest of the world. I think it's safe to say that it can be used well, PowerPoint, by graphic designers, but historically it hasn't spoken to them on their level. It's got a bad rap.
Yeah, it's almost as if some designers look at PowerPoint as being beneath them, which drives me crazy.
Most.
Okay, yeah. I was kind of I really appreciate the designer who understands what PowerPoint's potential is. I mean, it's a blank. I've heard you guys say it before. It's a blank canvas. It's got a strong arsenal of tools that can be used to create amazingly dynamic presentations.
I think some designers, like especially a lot of sort of the young hip ones, I'll discover are using like Sketch or these other. There'll be like a new photo editing or vector editing program, mm-hmm. and they'll say, "Oh, this is so much better than Adobe. That's what I use. Yeah, it can only do 1/8 of the things, but it's cool." And so I've never understood, like, they're willing to use other programs, but PowerPoint, absolutely not.
You can apply your design knowledge and experience to anything. It's your experience. It's your design knowledge. You can apply it to PowerPoint just as you can apply it to Photoshop, InDesign, Illustrator. It's a tool.
Yeah, we've talked, I think, a lot about that on the podcast. So Troy, but yeah, what do you see?
I was going to let you two give it out there first, but here's one of the huge differences, which I think we just kind of reiterated, is working with – so the huge difference – from working in InDesign and PowerPoint is the end product. And InDesign is a print layout document program. Whether it's an actual printed piece or a PDF, it's designed to be read and absorbed by readers at a reader's pace. PowerPoint not only needs to stylize and lay out text, and if somebody's proficient, they'll follow all the design principles that someone would use in InDesign. But one of the big differences is that PowerPoint needs to set up text to be read, understood, and retained at a very quick pace, because the presenter will advance off of that content before the reader is often ready to. So there are some additional parameters that most presentation design needs to think about when it's for presentation. Now, if it's a PowerPoint document where we're using PowerPoint to emulate print pieces, some of those parameters go away. You can get to more content density. You can go with little smaller fonts. But then I feel there are other things. Like, there are specialty designers that specialize in After Effects editors. I mean, they're phenomenal. They're not going to typically be an InDesign specialist. So again, there's a separation in what programs are used. But I'd say PowerPoint can actually accomplish both of those programs' tasks in certain areas. I mean, we've used PowerPoint to create highly visual animated text effects that we would normally offload to After Effects. So it's kind of an interesting paradigm where PowerPoint doesn't really have an identity, and it definitely doesn't have a professional design identity when it comes to design school and whatnot.
Yeah, I think that's right. And not to belabor the point, but it's in the family that it exists in with Word and Excel. Those are business applications. They're not design applications. In the world that InDesign lives in, it's Photoshop and Illustrator. So they're these sort of two different families. And Office has always been sold as a package.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to have it all fit a certain type of family and user base.
Well, and if you look at it, you know, everyone started, you know, using Word, and then Word was so similar to Excel, and Excel was so similar to PowerPoint that it was so easy for people to switch back and forth between the programs. Adobe didn't start, you know, aligning their programs until what, the last 10 years, something like that. For a time there, they were completely different.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So what are some examples of things, because we're talking so much about InDesign and PowerPoint, what are some examples of things that InDesign has or does that PowerPoint does not?
Well, hands down, the first one I think of is what you mentioned, Microsoft Word. So I'm going to skip the InDesign part here. Word has paragraph styles, which InDesign obviously has amazing leverage on paragraph styles, character styles. I mean, every type of style. But if you've not used them, it's kind of difficult to explain their value. Think of them as the format painter tool for a bunch of preset styles that can be applied to text instantly. The advantage is speed in formatting the content, consistency of doing things throughout a document or actually multiple documents. PowerPoint desperately needs to add those. So even before you get to the InDesign level, just comparing it to their own kind of other program suite, they're missing some typography elements.
Yeah, it's definitely missing it. Keynote introduced paragraph styles last year or the year before, or whenever the last major update was. InDesign has even, you know, Word have these global content controls like paragraph styles. They also have character styles. You know, that idea of, you know, PowerPoint has masters and everything like that, and InDesign has masters as well, although sometimes a little more powerful. But it's that idea of these global controls where you can change, you know, 100-page document, you know, with a click here or there. And PowerPoint is some of that, but I think it needs more.
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree. I mean, if PowerPoint had paragraph styles, that would make life so much easier and I would argue more consistent. And I don't know if Nolan, if you mentioned it, but, you know, links, the fact that InDesign links to images, I mean, I know it's not text related, but that is such a powerful thing. Those are huge advantages. But how about this one? I would say that this has a little bit more to do with functionality, but for lack of a better word, the idea of instant results is a huge advantage in InDesign. What I mean by that is that when you're working in InDesign, you change paragraph leading, you adjust spacing with the bullet indents, or you even adjust character spacing, and you see the results instantly on the page. To adjust those things and many others in PowerPoint, you have to work through a menu, and then you click OK, and then you see the results. And then if you don't like what you see, you have to go back into that menu and start the whole process again. It is so time consuming.
Yeah, and that's something we've screamed at them for years about.
Yep.
I think it actually, that's, I think, more of a UI thing, just that they really need to fix. All right, so we're going to get very in-depth. Let's talk about kerning, because that's a word I think a lot of people hear a lot and don't always understand. Lori, do you want to take that one?
Yes, I think kerning, kerning is simply adjusting the space between letters and characters in a body of text to obtain a pleasing result. So in the old days, like even before my time, think about newspapers, for example. They would set their type manually using those little tchotchke, those little metal blocks of letters. You know, like I mentioned, like you see in the home decor perhaps today. As you can imagine, the person arranging these tiny metal blocks of letters they'd have the ability to push letters closer together or keep them further apart if needed, you know, like a space between words. But there's a lot more detail to this process, but you get the idea. Design programs today and fonts themselves have basic kerning built into them. So I would imagine there are some people out there who have never even kerned a letter or a number in their life.
One of the sort of design trends I'm seeing and I'm doing myself these days is exaggerated character spacing. So exaggerated kerning. In fact, I just did it this morning with using Georgia as a font, which I like the font a lot, but the default kerning is not great. But what I've been doing is like, and in PowerPoint, it's character spacing. That's what it's called.
Yes.
And it, of course, is not nearly as robust as what you can do in InDesign, but you can still spread things out. And that's what I was doing today. I was overly exaggerating it for a design effect.
Well, I'll go on the technical side. I'm not certain everyone knows it, but there is basic kerning control options in PowerPoint. They don't call it kerning, and it only started with PowerPoint 2007, the idea of adjusting the space between the letters you're just talking about. You have to get to it by knowing where to look, first of all. And it's there are some fairly easy kerning presets. So in the ribbon, there's the little A, V letters with the little widening arrow, and it has like very tight, tight, normal. That is kerning. And it kind of, you can choose one letter, or you can choose a whole word, you can choose a whole paragraph. It's very, very simplistic. It's easy access. It's in the toolbar. If you want to dig into the font, it's just the font pop-up dialog, just called font. There's a character spacing tab, which is the one Nolan was referencing there. Character spacing is kerning. It's very simple. I would say it's almost painful to use because there's no instant feedback. You have to apply a number of points between the letters, and then you have to hit OK, see it, and then you have to go open that dialog back up. But it's there. I think the first time I learned the value of kerning, and I'm going to just turn this discussion over to you two, is we were typesetting probably business cards for one of my earlier companies, and Lori's like, okay, now let's work on it. I was like, it's a business card. It looks great. Spent probably 20 minutes kerning out the phone number, you know, because if you have a 7 and you have a 1, there's a big gap. If you have a 0 and an 8, there's a small gap because just the space of the characters. And that's where I mean, the before and after on that was like a light bulb went off. It's like, oh my gosh, there is amazing legibility differences in just typesetting with proper kerning a phone number.
Okay, I feel like I need to pop in here and just make seriously a public service announcement. Please, please kern your numbers when you use them in a headline or as featured text. I can't tell you how many times I look at a presentation and it's supposed to be, you know, I don't know, the date, 1991, but it's really a 1, then a 99, and then another 1 because they're so spread out. And it's, as soon as I see that, I'm like, okay, probably a designer did not work on this. You've got to manually tighten those letters up if you want.
Yeah, the problem though in PowerPoint is though it's all or nothing with character spacing. So to the line, whereas again, to go back to InDesign, you can do individual kerning in between individual letters. So
well to get around that though, if in my example for, you know, 1991, I'll highlight just the 1 and then go into the menu, the character spacing menu, and I might condense that spacing by 10 or even 15 points, depending on the font, to get it closer together.
That's true.
Nolan, you can select, but you have to, not like InDesign where you place your cursor. You can select individuals. You can use the instance. It's just a painful process.
Labor intensive.
Yeah, not like, hey, I need negative 10% out of the whole thing like in InDesign. It's a painful process. It's there. But big numbers, Lori, I totally agree. I think numbers, because the block of space a character occupies, and some fonts like Georgia, I was actually just typing in numbers with Georgia, Nolan, based on your example, you're right. The spacing, not so great. The space in between letters, the kerning.
Yeah.
Okay. Widows and orphans. I'm just changing the topic here to keep us going because you two will talk for a long time on one specific thing.
Well, we'll try not to. We don't want this to be
a bigger thing, which is line wraps and things. What do you think about widows or orphans as they apply to slide design? Are they something we should consider? Are they important?
Yeah. You go ahead, Lori.
I'm so sorry. All I had to say is I think everyone at our office would absolutely agree that, Troy, you are the king of widows and orphans. Everyone knows. I mean, we're pretty good at it because Troy catches every single one.
Well, I'm a little anal about it as well.
Okay,
just
good.
Something that just jumps out at me and I got to fix them.
I think it's a quick and easy way to decide if it was just somebody pasting in text or somebody that actually looked at the flow and the design and the visual of the text. And again, I'm looking at it from the audience perspective. Who is viewing this and how are they going to interpret this?
Hey, what is the difference between widows and orphans? Because I've read it over the years, but I just lump them together. And some people say there is no difference. But
There is a difference. And so a widow is technically when there's less than 7 characters, not 7 words, but 7 characters on a line. So if you end a word with W-I-D-O. So widow, if you had the word widow on a line all by itself, it would be a widow because it's less than 7 characters. You don't want to have too short of an element on a line. Part of that goes back to multi-column layout and the big gaps you'd be leaving and those creating kind of, not subliminal, like it creates arrows pointing the wrong way. And an orphan, is a line of text that doesn't stay in the same column as the paragraph started. So if you have a multi-column, and an orphan technically is when the word goes up into the next column. It was orphaned or separated from its, you know, original column.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. And so I think I think it's anything that sort of sticks out visually and looks like it's hanging out on its own that you kind of need to fix. And that's fixed. And that kind of goes back to soft returns, which we've talked about.
Yes.
Shift enter in almost any program will give you a soft return to fix a widow or an orphan. And that will send it to the next line without creating a new paragraph. So always shift return.
Okay, so what about hyphens, or specifically N dashes and M dashes?
We're getting into the weeds here.
Why not? But sure. Those are professional typography That's elements. They should apply to slide design.
Okay, what's the difference between an N dash and an M dash? Go ahead.
Before you even get to what is the difference or what they are, I will say this, and we're going to go right back to why does PowerPoint sometimes get the raw end of the deal, or kind of look at it as a bad design program? It is painful, or I should just say it's very time consuming to format these in Microsoft PowerPoint, because Microsoft's autocorrect or auto format thing, it overrides whatever you want to do. It doesn't give you the consistency you want, and it's kind of hard to find them in the the symbol list. They're not easily accessible. I find it much faster and easier in InDesign.
Yeah. So an N dash is literally the width of the letter N, at least it used to be. An M dash is longer. That's literally the width of an M. You can use both of those when you're sort of in the context of a sentence where you're like throw a dash in as sort of an interjection. Although the M dash, you're not supposed to have spaces on either side. N dash, you are. You can also use an N dash in between dates like 1999 to 2000. And then a hyphen is shorter than both of them. That's the tiny little tick. And that's just within words. That shouldn't be that's a hyphenated word. You shouldn't be using that as punctuation within a sentence, as sort of an interjection, if that all makes sense. So
it does, but PowerPoint doesn't, from what you just said. PowerPoint, for instance, if you were to type the dates 1999 to 2017, if you did, 1999, no spaces, just dash 2017, PowerPoint gives it, does it do the N dash or just a dash? That I don't know.
It does just a dash.
Does it?
It
does just a hyphen.
A hyphen. But here's the deal, though. If you type 1999 space dash space 2017, you get the M dash, which, Nolan, you're right. You're just saying usually M dashes, you don't have spaces on either side. But yet.
It did that. That's.
Yeah. I mean, that's how that's my trick to getting the longer dash. But you have to, follow it up with a space and another character to trigger PowerPoint to give you.
No, it gives you an N dash by doing that, not an M.
Okay. Yeah,
so that actually is correct, believe it or not.
All right.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Okay.
Everyone still with us?
We're getting way into the typesetting and typography details
what's next?
Here.
What's next?
Okay. How about tabs versus spacebar spaces? They're not the same thing. One is good in my opinion. The other is very, very bad. So do you agree? At the beginning of a paragraph, how are you going to indent the first sentence as example?
With as many spaces as we can, right? Is that the right answer? No, I think that's the wrong answer. Strike that.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Never, ever, ever use spaces to indent text. Although, to be fair, I have done that every once in a blue moon, but there's a specific circumstance for doing it.
Circumstance is laziness. No.
No, it was not.
I just can't find the tab ruler.
Okay, I'm going to, when you properly use tabs, you enable further editing to be much quicker, consistent.
Yes. Yeah.
You even have the opportunity to be ultra detailed if you need to be, and you can use the measurements, that are within that tab ruler. So
here's the number one reason in PowerPoint. Okay, let me say this. Actually, this is one of the things that I feel is easier in PowerPoint than in InDesign. Because tabs in InDesign, you can't work off the main page ruler. You have to bring up the you know, command shift
the floating T. Thing.
Yeah, the floating tab thing, which I actually find a little bit, because it doesn't actually align to the page. So in PowerPoint, I've from the training programs that I do, I see the number one reason that people don't do tabs, or let me rephrase that, the number one reason they don't modify tabs, because everybody knows how to use the tab key, and if it doesn't go where they want, they just start hitting spaces. They don't have the ruler turned on to see the little tab indicators. So yeah. Once you turn the ruler on, which I really feel should be the default, it should just be on because it's so valuable when you install PowerPoint or start PowerPoint, that once people see the ruler and you show them how easy it is to use, they suddenly kind of realize how they don't need to use spaces. But I think spaces are used because people just don't see how to do it initially. But it's a horrible thing when you go to reformat, you take text from one slide, you put another, and all of a sudden you end up with this huge gap that you have to go and manually remove. It's, yeah, not happy.
Well, and somewhat related, what about when you get a file and you have all the extra returns at the end of the paragraph, yeah, and you've got, you know, 50 different returns that are just hanging out down there doing nothing? Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a case. You really probably should never have to hit the space bar twice because there shouldn't be two spaces after a period, right? And
no,
you should never be putting in using it for tabs. So why would you hit the space bar?
But that's what I learned when I had my typewriting class in high school.
But that's because the guys were in the back room manually setting the text.
But seriously, I mean, we used to be taught two spaces between sentences.
Yeah, because it was on a typewriter.
Right.
With mono spacing.
And people still do that.
That was a typewriter that didn't typeset.
That was pre-kerning.
yeah, basically.
Moving on.
All right. What are we talking about? Inches and footmarks. That's another typographical mistake we see all the time, right?
I think this is feeling like therapy.
Yeah.
All these pet peeves. Okay, so we're on the same page. Quote marks, whether they be single or double quotes, or they're almost always slightly curved. Of course, some fonts, you know, stylize them differently, whereas an inch or a footmark are straight up and down. That being said, quote marks that face the wrong way drive me crazy. So please use quote marks for quoting text, not for measurement.
Measurement should just be the two up and down.
Yep.
Okay, wait, I'm going to throw one out there just because this really bothers me. Why on my iPhone can I not do 85 degrees out? There's no little degree symbol because a degree and an asterisk are different too.
Yeah, that bugs me. That little degree sign is hard to find in glyphs like everywhere. But you're right. I don't think it exists at all on the iPhone.
But again, people use the asterisk because they can't go find the hollow circle degree all the time when they're doing texture.
That and the sense, symbol are like the two missing glyphs that nobody can ever find.
Agreed. Okay, so hey, I know you guys covered this a little bit in the first typography episode, but I wanted to expand upon leading or line spacing just for a second. I know that you know, when I look at a presentation, I can almost immediately tell when someone has left it at the default line spacing, the single spacing. And I think you guys would agree the PowerPoint default line spacing looks wrong. I think it looks unfinished. But good type design will allow the eye to easily group text together, and it will even lead the eye, you know, from the primary focus you want your person to see onto the next important piece of information and so on. So there's a funny thing that goes on at our office. Everyone has now figured out that Troy is a 0.9 line spacing guy, but I am a 0.85 line spacing person. But that's not my point. I'm sure
you guys t-shirts.
But she is definitely making a point there.
It's true. Everyone knows, like, literally, they're like, oh, this is Lori. I better do 0.85. Anyway, so I'm sure you guys have noticed this, but different fonts need different line spacing.
Yeah.
And this is especially true when you're using decorative fonts or even script fonts. Usually script fonts, you have to really tighten up that line spacing.
Okay. What about the difference between lowercase where they have the hanging letters and uppercase? I have a different rule there. So when it's all uppercase, can the line spacing be different?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's nothing hanging. So I make it really small. You can go down as far as 0.75.
You know, you're right, because I just did something in Copperplate Gothic, which is all caps, and you're right. I think I went down to like 0.7 or 0.75, because it just kept, I was like, really? It just kept, you know, being too much.
But you're right. You know, going with the whole mono thing, you know, you're saying mono spacing for the double period thing. That's exactly, I'm just putting two and two together here. That's exactly what the single line spacing is. It's mono spacing. Everything gets the same spacing between lines, whether it's a paragraph break, a soft return, or within a paragraph, it's all the same spacing. And that's why you get people that do, not only does it bother me that we get the double, you know, the spacing for the indenting of tabs, you know, using a space bar, but people do two returns to create a space between paragraphs because the paragraph spacing tool is a little bit difficult to access in PowerPoint, whereas in InDesign, it's, hey, it's right there on my ribbon. I'm going to click this button and boom, it's done. But that's another big one, is people add extra carriage returns to create paragraph spacing.
Hey, Lori, do you have an opinion on spacing before paragraph or after paragraph?
I was hoping. I listened to you guys. I'm like, ooh. Okay, I'm a before person. I do all my paragraph spacing before. Again, I was really intrigued when you guys were discussing this, and I'm not sure there's a right or a wrong answer, but yes, I'm in the before camp.
I can't even remember now. I think I've been a convert to before, and I think there's a reason. There's some – anyway, moving on because I – can't explain myself.
Okay, but speaking of last episodes, and this is the only other thing, Sandy had mentioned the selection pane last time. And as I was listening, I'm like, oh my gosh, I totally thought of a way I absolutely use it and related to typography. Actually, I have to give credit where credit's due. Amber at our office pointed this out to me. But there are occasions when your slide design might call for a custom font. Let's say you have a quote that you want to add some stylized text to, or maybe you have some numbers that need to be super thick. Well, I think you guys agreed the idea of custom fonts and downloading them, that can sometimes be just you just don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But if you're really needing a custom font and you need to use it on maybe just a couple slides, use the selection pane. And so what I do is I will create my beautiful quote using my stylized script font. Then in the selection pane, I will name that layer, something like quote-editable. Then I'll take that quote, I'll select the box, copy it, and I will paste special as a photo, as an image. And then I will rename that layer as something like quote flat. And all you do is I hide my editable live one. So for the client, what they get is they get flat art that happens to be text and it's working great for them. But as the designer, I know that if they change the quote, I can go back into my selection pane, unhide it, change it, you know, repeat the process of pasting its art again, and voila.
That's a great thing. You know, back to the InDesign thing, one of the cool things there is layers for the whole document. So where selection pane really only, I mean, it is technically layers, but each item is a layer, although you can group stuff, but that is only on a per slide basis. With InDesign, let's say, like, you could have a 100-page document and you could set all that type that you just described on their own layers, and you could turn them globally on and off, which is, that's cool. Really helpful. Or you can lock them so, you know, you can't select them or anything. Having layers in PowerPoint could help, I think. I don't think it's high on the priority list, but it'd be nice.
One day.
Yes. Maybe.
Okay, wow. Our round two discussion on typography was definitely longer than I expected. We still have a list of topics that I think Lori brought to the table that we didn't cover. But, you know, how it applies to layout design and ultimately professional PowerPoint slides is truly a big design area that should be paid attention to more in presentation design. Many thanks to Lori from TLC Creative Services for joining us in a conversation and providing a lot of those formal graphic design and print design insights. Thank you to everyone for joining us on the discussion and letting us be a part of your day. Okay, Lori, this is a fun section. We have what we call presentation pro and tech tips. Basically, what is something cool that you've used or seen that's out there? Nolan, start us off.
Well, I just discovered, like, a couple days ago, this thing called, it's a PowerPoint add-in called Office One Shortcut Manager for PowerPoint. And this is exactly what I was asking for just a couple of episodes ago. It allows you to make custom keystrokes on the PC for PowerPoint for functions that you do all the time. So on the Mac, as I this is one of my tips a couple episodes ago, you can use Mac OS's key preferences, system-wide preferences, to change and customize the keyboard shortcuts for any program. So in PowerPoint, I go in and, for example, my right aligned, all my align tools are control command right arrow, control command left arrow, up arrow, or control command bracket to bring something forward or back. So I can do all that aligning, which I do all the time, right from the keyboard, because PowerPoint doesn't give you those shortcuts. On the PC, there was never any, I didn't think that was possible at all. But this Office One shortcut manager for PowerPoint, it's a plugin. We'll have the link there. That is a PowerPoint plugin that allows you to set all whatever key commands you want for any function. And it's a really nice UI. You can sort and find functions and everything. And so there you go. It's $40, which I think is a little on the high side. But if you're constantly hunting and pecking for all your line or any tool that you wish for there was a shortcut for, this will do it for you.
Nolan, that's amazing. I was literally listening to that tip driving down the freeway, and I had this image of me using my right arrows and left arrows to write a line. I'm like, that would be so cool. Oh my gosh.
It is really nice.
I'm so excited. Okay, so I'm new to this, and so no judging my tip. But as you know, I've been traveling a lot, and so this is more of a travel tip. But a couple things that I think that lead to a less than ideal hotel room experience are dry air and or a non-fresh smelling room. I hope you haven't experienced those, but if you travel a lot, I'm sure you have. If you're traveling in winter to like a cold location, you know, you expect the air to be dry and you use a lot of lotion on your hands. In some cases though, hotels, you know, they'll have a humidifying solution in place to combat that dry air. But when they don't, I have a portable diffuser that I travel with. Mine is about the size of a soda can. It plugs into any USB powered port. So you can imagine I can use it, you know, with my laptop or whatever. But I just add the right amount of water. It's not a lot. I turn it on and voila, I have this nice fine mist of water that starts to battle that dry air. And then here's the kicker. If your room happens to be musty or smoky smelling, or just plain smells, I add a few drops of my favorite essential oil and it works great. It's like this room air freshener. And so the only downside is that it is a travel size, so it doesn't hold a lot. So it doesn't last all night. But it's something I absolutely love. I won't travel without it now.
I will concur. I have had the benefit of it being available, and it's very cool and easy to go with, and it makes the hotel nice. Okay, so mine is a Windows-only one. But Nolan, I'd like you to chime in because I know you can do this on the Mac. I just can't remember the key command. And it's, in my case, it's the Windows key plus the left or right arrow. So in this case, I am actually looking at PowerPoint. I want to make it the left half of my monitor. So I selected PowerPoint. I held the Windows key and the left arrow, and it repositions it to one half of my screen. And then I took our Chrome web browser where we're, you know, what we use to access our recording software, and I put it on the right side by selecting it and Windows plus the right key, and it slid it over. So now I've got both screens evenly paced. I didn't have to reposition. I didn't have to do anything. It's instantly there. It's a really, really cool feature. I really wish I could remember the name of what Windows calls it, but it's the idea of how do I size a window to be half of the screen. And how do you do that on the Mac? I know you can do it on a Mac.
I have no idea how you do it.
Really?
To be honest. I know you can make something full screen easily with the little traffic light thing, but I don't know about that. It might be possible. And I didn't know about the key commands on the PC. What I would do is just take it and like move it to the left of the page, mm-hmm. at which point it kind of like magnetizes.
Yes.
And then you can do it to the right side as well. I didn't know there were key commands for it.
I'm sure the Windows developers use the word magnetize when they're describing it. You know what? I actually turned that off. So mine's only on the keyboard command because we have dual monitors and you can't slide it to that middle, the right edge of the left monitor or the left edge of the right monitor, because it just goes to the next screen over. So we use the Windows key all the time, and I find so many people don't know it. I'm working on my laptop with a single screen, and it was just easier just to grab it and, you know, click on the program, Windows left, click on the program, Windows right, it's there. It's also incredibly helpful if you're doing a presentation setup where your computer is hooked up to a projector and you know, you open up one of those dialog boxes and it's on the projector monitor because it's a second monitor now if you're extended desktop. Let me preface that. And that you can't see that secondary, you can't see the dialog box that's stuck out there. Or maybe it's even a program that opened up on the second monitor. Just click on your toolbar and Windows left and it'll come, you know, it'll jump back over to your main monitor here. So it's incredibly helpful in those cases. Hopefully that made sense.
I did a little research. It's called split view on the Mac. And the way you actually do it is by using those little traffic light things. You click and hold the green button just for a couple seconds. And then you click another window and it'll auto fit both of them. So.
Oh, okay. I know they have an auto fit thing. And that's the reason I was so excited to see it on the Windows side. I use it all the time. Hey, this is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a graphic design studio team focused on presentation design. Check us out online at www.tlccreative.com. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TLC Creative Services and the presentation blog at thepowerpointblog.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. Also my brand new YouTube channel where I'm putting up little tutorials and quick tips on PowerPoint. If you need training for your organization, customized training, give me a call. We do that for presentation, data viz, and speech coaching as well. And that's enough URLs and stuff for today.
And this is Lori from TLC Creative Services, the L in TLC. Troy already covered our contact information, so just thanks for letting me hang out with you guys this week, and Sandy will be back next time.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.